friends. Welcome back to another episode of the Nomad Strength Show. We've got a really fun one today because we're bringing back one of the OGs of this podcast. I believe Ray was episode, I want to say 10. I'll double check this. He was in the first 10 episodes, and my buddy Ray Zingler, owner of Zingler Strength and Conditioning down in Georgia, and I was really excited to bring him back because he and I think a lot alike about a lot of things, not just training related, but we haven't just sat down and talked about training for a long time. And so I wanted to catch up with him. It's been 3 years since he did the other podcast, which is crazy that we've been doing this for that long already. But we wanted to catch up because we have boys that are the same age, and we have these ideas of how we want to introduce athletics and training and just health and performance and all of these things that we are both involved in as livelihoods, but how do we introduce these to our young boys now that they're both, Ray's is five, mine's almost five, and how do we introduce these to these things and have them still be things that they enjoy, have them be things that they grow to love and want to pursue? It's a really fun place for us both to be right now. So we spent a good amount of time talking about how we're doing these things with our two boys, and then, you know, the subsequent children that come after that. Now that we've done it with the first one, how do we continue this pattern? How do we introduce health? How do we instill in our children why this is important and how to do it and love it? So we spent a lot of time with that. We also talked a lot about how he's doing things with the youth that he coaches. He primarily coaches youth athletes in his area and does group training models with them, and is amazing at preparing them for sport and has a lot of really cool ways that he looks about doing that. And so we wanted to get into the nitty gritty of his training with them. And then we just talked straight up development and learning and the things that we enjoy reading. And he's got a great list of books that he puts out. And it was just a really fun conversation. So I'm really excited to get to have you guys listen to this one with Ray again. He's one of the favorite podcast guests in the entirety of all of this podcast that we've done. Episode number 10 consistently is still up there with the most listened to of any of the ones that we've done. So I know you guys are going to enjoy this one. And without further ado, let's get into the episode with Ray Zingler. All right, everybody, we're back with the Nomad Strength Show, and we have one of the OGs of guests on the show. I went back and looked. You were episode 10, Ray.
Wow.
And yeah, which is crazy because the one that this airs will be episode 225.
Whew.
So
we've been in the game.
It's been a while. Yeah. We cranked out some stuff, but I'm joined today by Ray Zingler, and Ray and I have connected for the last few years because we were very, and we realized this the last time we chatted, we're essentially the same person and in many ways. And so
I love it.
It was like those, it's the stepbrothers moment. Like, did we just become best friends? And so, but Ray's a fantastic coach down in your Georgia now, right?
Yes, or
is
that, yes.
But you got the, yep. is your place up in the sticks still in Georgia as well? Or
yes.
Is that somewhere else?
It's all Georgia. So
that's
I've got all my properties here. Yeah. It's some there. I live currently kind of in the north, like middle of the state near Atlanta, yeah. But then I've got a property up in the mountains, but yes, we're right here in North Georgia. Yes,
the bug out location.
Yes, absolutely. That is ready to rock at all times for sure.
Probably a little bit more on the front of mind lately, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. I bought it right before the world went to hell in a handbasket, and I'd never been more grateful. So
I love it, dude. Well, I'm pumped to get to catch up and just talk about training and stuff. With one of the things I really wanted to get into with you is we were talking a little bit before we hit record. Last time we chatted, each of us only had one child, and we both have boys that are within just a couple of months of each other age wise. And so we're both in this stage right now where we were talking, you know, before it's toddlers, it's fun. It's like all playing games and doing all of these things that they're just excited about everything all the time. But the boys are in this stage now where it's like, okay, you guys are actually wanting to learn and begin. Like we're actually, you know, it's all development. Right?
Right.
But it's like now we're being a little bit more purposeful with some stuff, even if it's disguised still as fun.
Sure. Right?
And I know that your boy, I love the videos of him doing all of the weight stuff. Like I remember the earliest videos of him, as soon as he could walk, picking up the dumbbells and running them over to the bench. Like
those
videos are my favorite. And so
I love it.
I kind of want to start there and just like, how has the transition to him being, he just turned 5 and mine turns 5 in a couple of months. Like this space now with your son, like how fun is this time to like, cause he's starting to express interests.
Right.
And he's starting to be like, ooh, I actually really like this, or I want to learn this. And now they can verbally tell you. Like,
exactly.
That's the cool part. He's like, yeah, dad, I want to go do this now. So like, what's this whole little experience of time been like for you?
Right. No, I appreciate that question. And I love how kind of like in you are from a standpoint of understanding like the gamify aspect and all that stuff, which again is super, super important. You know, it's funny. A lot of people see me, what I do with my son, and they think that, oh my gosh, he's trying to turn him into some like Instagram sensation or YouTube, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, at the end of the day, all I'm trying to do is help my child, who's obviously, you know, this very, very impressionable. They're like sponges at this age, and help him positively associate with positive behaviors. It's not about weight. It's not about the med ball being 20 pounds or 25 pounds. It's just tying to his identity, the concept of doing this physical thing. And then right now, like you've said, camouflaging it is fun, right? You know, so it's not that it's like, oh, Ray trains his son 2 hours a day, 7 days a week to make this, you know, really, to be honest with you, it's 10 to 15 minutes a day of what I call micro-dosed training that's camouflaged as fun. And, you know, it's funny how it all started out is like we were outside playing one day and I had a bunch of like just bricks laying on the ground. We had this old dog kennel, this old dog crate, and he just picked him up, put him on, picked him up, put him on. It was like I saw him looking for the reward or praise from his dad, which obviously I was very proud of him for like showcasing the effort. But to your point a second ago, he couldn't tell me that he like wanted to do that. I mean, I could see it. But now, to your point, fast forward 5 years and you know, this morning as an example, I'm down in my office and I see him walk down the stairs and he's rubbing sleep out of his eyes. Dad, can we get a workout in? You know, so now it's like, awesome. Whoa, all right. Like here, this is neat. You know, so what I'm trying to do now is obviously keep everything fundamental in nature. You know, I see a lot of people go the wrong way with their kids, whether that be strength and conditioning or sports, you know, altogether. They're a lot of times they try to do dad's favorite sport from back in the day, which if you loved baseball, now you're going to stick your kid in front of a T-ball. First of all, I love the game of baseball as well, but it can be a little bit boring for that active-minded five-year-old you know, you swing at this bat and then you sit in left field, not knocking the game at all. But I looked at it from a concept of like, I want my kid to be well-rounded. I want him to be athletic and I want him to have exposures to these different stimuluses. So in addition to the training that we do, which is essentially just very, very regressed fundamental strength and conditioning. We jump, we run, we sprint, we change directions, we lift weights, you know, whatever. But I'm also have him heavily involved in like gymnastics and Ninja Warrior Gym and these things to where he's learning to kind of how to move his body in space. You know, I think a lot of us as people in the modern world, we try to get our kids that, oh, he needs to start soccer at 3 and baseball at 3. But what we miss is just like this fundamental level of athleticism, because we're so focused on this like buy in and sell out to everything right now, you know, blah. And it's like, I look at my buddies from back in high school, the most athletic friends I had, they had gymnastics backgrounds, they had swimming backgrounds, they did these things. It's funny, you know, this is a fast forwarding a bit, but we had this boy several years ago at our gym and he was a dancer and people made fun of, oh, you know, this kid's a dancer, what a loser, he's a boy and he's a dancer. And then he jumped 37.5 on the vertical jump mat while all these tough football guys jumped 26.5. So all of a sudden that loser dancer, you know, and I saw these things, I'm like, wait a minute, you know. So I have this approach of more like, you know, I'm going to focus on raw athleticism and fun right now. And then as he gets older, we'll obviously expose him to all the different sports and things. And if he takes up an interest in a particular activity, then, hey, we're going to obviously encourage that. But at the same time, right now, I want to, I guess, essentially, you know, deepen his reservoir of capacity for athletic movement. You know, now whether that's wrestling, baseball, soccer, you know, I don't really care, to be honest. And if the kid, and it's funny, I tell people all the time, Ray, what sport would you love to see him play? It's like, if that kid grows up and he's nice to people, he loves the Lord, and he likes the cello, I'm going to clap for the cello. And I don't know a damn thing about the cello. So it's really, truthfully, I want to fill his cup as much as I can and then let his interests, you know, take root wherever that may be, and then encourage that, you know. So it's really just, again, I know that time, as you know, goes fast. But right now at 5 years old, we fortunately, if we're aware, have the luxury of time. And when we have the luxury of time, I can go really slow. And my opinion is, let's do a little bit every single day to where it's fun for 10 minutes versus you and I might be able to train 3 or 4 days a week and have a focused hour-long session. Right now, I'm just giving him quick hits of little doses, little doses, little 100%. Doses, but 10 minutes here, 12 minutes there. Do the math. What is that after 800 times? Whoa, we just got several hours. You know, my kid will be 10 years old, Lord willing, and have, you know, the training age of a 10-year-old, where there's many 18-year-olds who are biologically 18, but they have a training age of 2, you know, so it's not to say that my kid's going to be some phenom, but if I can take the luxury of time and build up his training age by 10 to 15 minute little bouts here and there, I'm looking at him, obviously I want to live in the moment and enjoy everything right now, but what's he going to be like at 12 if I'm pumping 15, 20 minutes at a time into him every day from the time he was 2?
And you know, even so just from a health, even just from a health standpoint, and from a like a mobility and strength, just generalized, not even as it relates to anything to perform, to, you know, quote unquote performance.
Exactly, I can
because
care less,
I think about this whole, you know, the whole next with, you know, with mine, it, with them both being kindergarten age next year,
right,
like as much as we don't want the constant sitting. Right. There's aspects of that time in life where it's like some of it's a little unavoidable.
Right. So for sure.
And so if you're also doing these kinds of things at the same time that this is happening, rather than like kid never does anything, he goes into a class, he sits all day, doesn't do anything, he's hunched over, he doesn't really play at recess, like establishing those patterns now will at least be, make it easier to stay healthy through all those instead of having to like make up for it in 10 years if he actually wants to start working out hard and training.
For sure.
You know, and so that's one of the things that that I've noticed too is the things that are really fun for him are the things that he sees me doing. And like I have kettlebells all over this place. Like just in random places, out in the yard, on sidewalks, like out on the patio, in the house, out in the shed, like just all over the place.
Right.
Because I am sometimes lazy with putting them back when I do carries or whatever. Right. But almost without fail, every time he walks by one, he wants to pick it up just to deadlift it. And he'll always yell to see if I'm watching. And he actually just did the 16 kilo for like four solid looking reps the other day. And he's 42 pounds. So that's literally like 70 something, 80% of his body weight.
Right.
And that was one of the things I was going to wanted to get into with you is, you know, obviously there's some aspect of teaching movement as it goes in order to do it most effectively and most efficiently and most safely.
Sure. Right.
But I think with kids and you train kids, you know, up to high school, like that's your primary
job. Absolutely.
What I think gets overdone is, especially in the really young ones, is harping on super, super strict, rigid technique stuff. They don't really need it yet. Like they haven't
done,
like
all.
You're building the good patterns at this point, not fixing bad ones.
Absolutely.
And so like, I think what that does, and I see it a lot with the explosive things like jumping and landing. And like, there's these guys that are really, you know, anal about like you have to land and how your knees have to look when you jump. And you're doing this to like 10, 11 year olds.
Right.
And I'm like, dude, they can land. I don't know if you remember being 10 or 11, like I would freaking jump off a play set 18 feet in the air and just land on the ground and roll like it's natural.
You knew how to do it. Yeah,
exactly. Like
nobody taught you. Right.
Exactly. Nobody's like, well, you gotta land and then dip your shoulder and like, or when you go to jump, like drive knees out or whatever. And like, even that, I'm like, not really, you know, like let the knees do what they need to do. And then correct if you see something that's completely dangerous,
for sure.
But it's like those movements at that age are natural. And like, that's how they're supposed to be going. So it's like when you're seeing this, and this is my transition, you know, not only from just the stuff that you do with your boy, but like when you start with kids that are coming to you with zero, like how much of that are you doing versus like, just kind of let them figure it out and I'll guide them a little bit. You know what I mean?
For sure. For sure. That's a great question. To kind of, you know, echo what you were saying, it's like, yes, you know, I do want to make sure we have good technique and this and that. But one thing I want to say, and you know how it is with the knee valgus or the knee knock, oh, his knees are caving. Watch every elite sprinter, watch every elite jumper, and there's going to be an element of knee valgus. If knee valgus doesn't exist in Usain Bolt's, you know, structure, he wouldn't be Usain Bolt. You know, there's naturally going, watch him take off. Is he perfect? You know, we look at the just elite sprinters over the course of time, you know, they're very few of them are perfect, and it's like their imperfections are exactly what allows them to be unique. Yes. And to be people that we're talking about.
Think
you know,
watching so Michael Johnson run, how goofy he like his technique was. Like, it's right. Not going to be perfect.
No. And then you see Michael Phelps, you know, they talk about the kyphosis. You've probably seen that picture where he's like hunched mm-hmm. over. And it's like, I joked one time, I commented, they're like, oh my God, he's hyper kyphotic. And I'm like, yeah, because his neck is strained from the amount of gold medals that are weighing him down. You know, that's right. Why he's like that, you know? So like, thanks Jim from Arkansas for calling him out.
That
one, like,
that one's a really interesting example too, because I've seen a lot of things that made me kind of challenge my thought on this recently from a couple of different coaches that I've really come to like. One of them, he's an Australian guy. His name is Angus Bradley, I think is his name.
Yeah. Oh, I know who it is. Yeah.
Yeah. And he has some really honestly, some insights that have kind of challenged how I've thought about a lot of this stuff. And he was talking about that specifically, like that, you know, that super kyphotic that we would have automatically, you know, years
shit
past,
our
like,
pants
oh
over.
No, stick your right. chest up, like right. really, really retract right. your shoulder blades. He's like, that actually shows that they're very, that they're capable of disassociating their shoulder blades from their spine and their shoulder capsules themselves. Like, they actually have really good full range through there. They can hang down and not be straining on right. things. So it's actually, I'm like, damn, I've never thought of it that way before.
For sure. Like, and it's a great way to think about it, you know, and how I kind of funnel this down to the kids our age. You know, there's a really, really smart guy. His name's Tim Anderson. He authored a mm-hmm. book called Original Strength. And it's basically talking about like how as children, you know, our kids' age, they do everything naturally. They can squat well, they can bend, they can roll, they can do all these different things. They can play, which is something that yeah. you and I might overlook in ourselves because we're so structured. But it's like right. you look at these kids that can play and they can move. And then as yeah. we get older, our levels of play decrease. And then all of a sudden what happens to increase our dysfunction, right? So it's like now we look at these kids and I look at Mac, for example, doing a kettlebell deadlift, which really the only kind of cueing I do is sometimes like whether I'm teaching him a little squat or a deadlift is I'll have him set his feet. Then I'll yeah. put PVC pipes in front and behind him just to kind of, you know, play the game of don't move your feet, you know, because yeah. that's the only thing that can really get a little wonky is if he goes to do a deadlift and the foot kicks out again. Yep. I don't shit my pants over it, but I like to kind of stabilize and create yep. that association with the foot and the ground. Other than that, I don't really freak out if his elbows bend and he's pulling it up. But again, the point that I'm making with all of this is like when I do see my son, quote, error in his movement, I often question myself like, all right, so he's looking at this as fun. His body is looking at this as problem solving. So whatever the exercise is, it wants to solve this perceived problem. And if it acts a certain way at 5 years old, if a jump in his knees valgus or cave in, or if he jumps and he lands right foot, left foot, if I want him to have this perfect deceleration landing yeah. mechanics, there's a reason that happened within that boy because his body assumed that that was the most efficient way to solve this quote problem. So now yeah. I can sit here and jump and say, well, I got 9 science books that said he needs to land, or I can take into account A, he's 5 and not anywhere near polished. B, we're essentially solving physical problems. Who am I to say that like, well, it wasn't by the book that author X wrote, then that means it's definitely wrong. No, to your point, if we're going to sit there and do a kettlebell deadlift and I'm trying to ego lift him with a 75-pound kettlebell, now I'm just an asshole. And if he does anything wrong, it's not because he's incapable. It's because yeah. I'm a poor leader. You know what I mean? Right. So it has really nothing to do with that side of it. So to your point, you know, another thing that I love to do with him is we do these, I'll have those bigger med balls on the ground and we yep. call them like Atlas loads or whatever. And they're yep. 10 pounds, 20 pounds, whatever it is. And then you'll get blowhard Jimmy on Instagram. Well, teach him to use his legs and not round over. I'm like, okay, first of all, have you ever watched like a professional strongman lift an Atlas? Yeah. It's not this like perfect hinge, you know, yeah. obviously there's technique to it, but yep. there's an element of brute strength. strength. And then I, you know, one of my favorite sports is wrestling. He doesn't have a neutral spine. Have you ever watched wrestling, Mike? You know, like you see these guys, they're flipped over upside down. Somebody's trying to like take their spine out of their skin and they're bent over, contorted. Like, do you really think rounding your back a little bit with a 10-pound med ball? No, to me, obviously, again, I don't want to be misunderstood here and say that I'm like preaching bad technique, but I believe in having, you know, strength in all ranges of motion. Now, I'm not going to purposely encourage, quote, bad technique, but to think that like while these kids are young and pliable, that they can't build, you know, some tolerance in different ranges or, you know, quote, less than ideal ranges of movement, you know, that's silly. You know, I do a lot of sprint work with my athletes and it's like, I could get them in track blocks and I could have them run this perfect ideal start. But how does that change if you're going up for a rebound in basketball, you get put on your ass. Now you got to sit up and get back on defense real fast. You don't get to get in a stance and set yourself up. So we do drills where I have the kids sitting down on their butts, set, go. And then all of a sudden they've got to kick the leg around and get up and go, because that's the real world speed stuff that I think is very, very real. You know, we try to put blinders on in training, which is obviously a closed environment where you and I can manipulate the variables, but then we put them out in the real world or in sport. And it's like, all of that perfect, ideal training that we were able to manicure, that goes out the window. Yeah. So in training, I believe we have to expose, whether the kid is 5 or 25, expose them to suboptimal positions and force them to overcome, because that's how the real world works. So
And that doesn't end either. Like, I think that's one of the things that most adults lack sorely in their training, because it just turns to this point where it's like, oh, I got these things that are kind of banged up. I'm just going to go into the gym and I'll lift whatever and I'll follow a program or whatever. But it's like, there's so much missing that was the reason that you were able to be athletic in earlier in life. And then you stop doing it. Like, that's
for sure.
That's the reason that all these things don't feel great now. Like, it's not because of those things and then you stop doing them. It's because you stop doing those things.
Absolutely. You know?
And it would make me think too, when you're talking about these different movements and being in sort of these suboptimal positions, like, that's all suboptimal is entirely dependent on the context.
For sure.
Because
for sure. Oh, hell yeah.
When I think about movements like a Jefferson curl.
Right.
Like, how many people would look at that? And I know, and I can tell you how many people, because if you watch anybody that knows how to do it and teaches it, go look at the comments on their Instagram post of them doing it. It's 90% people who have no idea what they're talking about saying you're going to destroy your back.
For sure.
It's no different than me telling a person to just go in and pick up a regular conventional deadlift and be like, hey, you've never done this before. Go put 300 pounds on the bar and see if you can lift this and see what happens. It's the exact same thing. You've never trained a Jefferson curl. So obviously we're not going to load it heavy. You have to develop that range and that capacity and that movement. And yeah, you can be really strong because your back is a really strong thing. And so it's the context of those is always what gets me, because people are like, oh, this exercise is terrible. I'm like,
for sure.
For what? For sure. For who?
Right.
When?
And I have to interrupt you. This is a funny story that you'll appreciate. I'm currently doing a program for myself. It's a 6-week-long program. I'm in week 6. It's just called Sleds and Squats, where essentially I do 1,000 yards of sled drags every day, or 1,000 yards of sled drags every day, 100 goblet squats. So I go 100-yard sled drag, 10 squats, blah, 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 10 rounds. I do it every day. You know, I kind of wave the load every week, whatever. Well, at the end of my set of 10 squats, I always do a Jefferson curl on the way down. So I catch it up and I squat it. And then on the way down, I do a Jefferson curl to really kind of, I have a lot of rigidity and strength in my core and spine during my goblet squat. So I want to kind of stretch it out with that Jefferson curl on the way down. And I do them at this local high school or whatever. And, you know, there's people out there on the track or whatever. And they see me training or whatever. And I had this guy and I was doing a Jefferson curl on the way down. I'm not knocking the guy. I appreciate him. He was out there walking, but he's an older man, you know, not in the best shape in the world. But he comes up to me after I do my Jefferson curl, like on the way down to set the kettlebell down. And you could tell he was like, oh, I got to teach you, you know, you got to make sure you're neutral spine. And like, I don't want to be a dick, man. I don't know it all, you know? So I was obviously in that context, very like, oh, thank you. I'll keep your tip in mind or whatever,
right.
You know, but it just went to show, you know, it kind of is like, you know, again, this is totally off topic, but like I raise dogs and I have dogs that stay outside, whether it's 10 degrees, 110 degrees, they're very resilient animals. And you'll get the lady that's got a lab that's 47 pounds overweight, huffing and puffing in the back of her car. You're abusing those dogs, you know? And I'm like, wait, what? Like my dogs, every one of them is peeled to the bone. They eat well. They're obedient. Like, and then now like the lady that like this poor dog, I'm looking in the backseat of her car that should weigh 70 pounds, is 110. And I'm the asshole. You know what I mean? Right. So it's kind of like people just don't know. And again, I want to obviously build others up, especially in fitness. So I didn't want to sit there and try to get into a dissertation with this guy. But to your point, it's like they don't know. On the surface, they've been conditioned to believe that Jefferson curl is bad. I know that stretching is good. I view the Jefferson curl as a loaded stretch. And if I do it with a load that I can handle, now I'm essentially getting a better and deeper stretch out of it. Whereas the novice gym seeing me do that says, oh my gosh, you're going to blow your spine out of your back. Yeah, if I was doing 405 and never having done it before, sure. Dude, a 53-pound kettlebell and like being very controlled with rounded shoulders and feeling each vertebra, you know, I know what the fuck I'm doing, but I'm not going to sit there and like try to be rude to that guy. But it's to your point, it's the misunderstanding of like suboptimal. You can call it suboptimal, but in a world that is full of suboptimal, being good at suboptimal has its advantages, I think.
I think it's a fake word.
Right. Me too. Me too. I do too. Suboptimal. Right. What are you talking about? Like we're a species that does two things, lives or dies. And if you, whatever you do allows you to live, like it, you, like if you beat the alternative, right?
Dude, that's
you
funny. Know? Cause we've been doing obviously a lot of, like the last 18 months or so, about 2 years or so for Brandon, but we've both been really heavy into the trad archery stuff. Right.
Yeah. That's
a world that's like very, it's very small actually.
Sure. Oh, I know.
But there's lots of purists and, you know, but there's the guys that are the harp on the technique stuff. And I get, especially if you don't know how to pull back a bow, like there are certain foundational things that you're like, doesn't matter where you are, like this will help. But Brandon's like, he's like, you know, I've got this and dude has had 1,000 pounds on his back before.
Right.
Right. Like he's got things that are junked up in his body that like most people have never had.
Don't even know what that means. Right.
And he's like, you know, I can do this and I can pull it back to this area. And you know, it's like, you know, I have good technique, not great technique. And he said this before.
Right.
And he's like, but you know what? I can look at what I'm shooting and I can hit it. Right. 9 times out of 10. And so he's like, at what point do you just like, okay, just do your thing, dude. You can shoot well enough. You know, you
think it's good enough
technique and you
for
can do
sure.
it.
And that's what's important. I look at it, whether it's a baseball player with his stance, you know, oh, well, his batter stance is a little bit off. Okay. Compared to what the guy has a 400 average, like leave him alone. My dad used to coach DBs in football. And you know, whether my dad liked the back pedal or the shuffle as a defensive back, it's like whatever makes most sense for that athlete. Maybe the book says it needs to be a back pedal. But if that athlete can accomplish the goal, which is playing good defense in a shuffle instead of a, why am I going to sit there and try to tinker with you? Do you want to be right or do you want to make a difference? And if what somebody is doing is quote suboptimal to you, but it gets the job accomplished, is it really sub? There's that fake word. Like it's objective based and he did it differently than me and it still worked. I can yell at him or I can accept that we're not all the same and some people are going to do things in a different manner.
All right, everybody, you guys know that I'm a coffee guy, so I got to take a minute here and tell you about Steady Grounds Coffee Company. As a micro roaster, they are all about quality and freshness. They craft unique blends and they're roasting everything to order, which is crazy. If you're a fan of the big, rich and bold flavor or more subtle and nuanced, Steady Grounds, Georgian CT Adams, out of Madison, Mississippi, they've got you covered. For their blends, Steady Grounds meticulously selects and combines high quality beans to create these really unique and flavorful profiles. The blend development process involves testing, experimentation, which is what we did with the Nomad Dark Roast, which I'm really excited for you guys to try if you haven't gotten a bag yet. They roast every bag made to order, which allows them to tailor the roast level to the customer's preference, and it maintains peak freshness. This is so when you get your bag, it is absolutely as fresh as it can be, and you can enjoy the full spectrum of flavor in every cup. I'm telling you, it is the real deal. So go to Steady Grounds Coffee Co. nomaddarkroast.com. Get whatever bag you want, but if you want to get the Nomad Dark Roast, obviously that's my favorite one, but you can use the code NOMAD15 at checkout for 15% discount on your entire order. So go to steadygroundscoffeeco.com and get your hands on a cup of amazing, exceptional coffee. And that is a... there's so many ways that there are those instances, those coaching moments missed, because that's truly where the coaching part of it comes in. Like, if you see the guy that's like, he's doing it better than the guys that are doing it with the technique that I coach, like, why am I going to try to take him and make him do it how I want him to do it? Like, that's where the coaching part comes in.
I see it all the time. And it's funny. Like, I use like a high box squat with a lot of my kids, because again, I'm not training powerlifters. I'm training athletes. And I use the squat as an overall strength movement. So like, they don't need to pass a test, or they don't have to get 3 white lights in a powerlifting meet. And it's funny. I've got some strong boys that'll squat 500-600 pounds, like very strong. And then like, I'll get a comment on Instagram from some guy that's like, oh, well, you know, that squat was a little high with 675 pounds. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, so if I dropped his weight down to like 515 and he sat on his ankles with, he'd still be stronger than 99.9% of America. See, it's like, it's funny. Like, I don't care about it or whatever, because again, I'm not trying to get the strong, you don't get rewarded in football for squatting the most, but I got some strong kids that love it. And that was another comment, you know, somebody, oh, well, that squat was a little bit high. He should go a little bit lower. And I DM'd the guy. He was actually trying to learn like why I use certain exercises. And I told him that squat might've been a little high for his hips, but what it wasn't high for is his mind, because in that kid's mind, he was ready to fist fight a bear with a butter knife. And I use training as much as an attitude as I do like anatomy, physiology. He didn't get the requisite depth to cross the threshold. Dude, like, the kid is ready to fight a bear. Fuck your like perfect world, you know? So that's something that, again, it's, you want to find those boundaries, because you don't want to excuse that to where like, hey, like, let's automatically teach a seventh grader to have no standards when it comes to working out. No, obviously there needs to be a standard, but at the same time too, it's like, I've learned, like, for example, with this high box squat, I can spend 6 months and going over ankle mobility and trying to fix everything under the sun, or I can have them squat 2 inches high and get a hellacious training effect and build confidence. So it's like, what do I do? I'm going to work on the mobilities in time, but I'm not just going to sit here and coddle these kids and make them feel like they have to be perfect tomorrow, when I know that, hey, Jimmy at LA Fitness is going to say that squat is high, but Jimmy at LA Fitness doesn't have a $200,000 scholarship that he earned playing sports. So I don't give a shit what Jimmy at LA Fitness says, you know? Right. So it's finding that balance of like, okay, I've always said this, and I believe this is true for athletes, but people in general, is the demand of the exercise has to meet the need of the individual, not the other way around. If somebody, and you don't need to be able to match this perfect mobility to be able to bench press. If a landmine press is better for you and you get a training effect and build strength in the pressing pattern, I'm not making Tim live and die by the bench press. I'm just not going to do that. So I look to use exercise to the benefit of the individual, and not the other way around. I'm not going to force some kid, hey, if powerlifting or Olympic lifting is your sport and you have to follow those rules, great.
Right.
But for the average person to sit here and say, you have to barbell back squat, I think is bullshit. Now, 10 years ago, I would have said, you're a puss if you don't do barbell German volume, or you suck. You know, now here I am playing with pink kettlebells getting my ass kicked, you know what I mean? So you
that actually makes me think too, there's two things that kind of spun off of that. There's the one that I was wanting to ask in that time, what are like you mentioned just now, like with barbell back squats or whatever, but what are some of those things that you've now come around on, or like kind of moved away from as these hard stances that you thought were, you know, super rigid for life? But then also too, you do all this in a group setting for the most part,
right,
when you're training the kids. So when you're talking about making these individualized adjustments, like, how do you manage that in a group setting
to
make sure that everybody's still getting everything that they need, but not wasting everybody else's time waiting for one person to do one thing that they're not, that nobody else is doing. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's a great question. You know, when I was growing up training, I was very, quote, hardcore. I was influenced by a guy named Branch Warren, IFBB pro, that was, you know, the whole thing. And I see that, and I, you know, all he did was barbell, barbell, barbell. So I was that guy that said, you know, you don't even need a dumbbell or a kettlebell, just barbell squat
did
and deadlift.
Did he pass away?
No, he's still here, fortunately.
Who am I thinking of?
There's
so many bodybuilders.
I was
going to
say,
away.
Sadly,
I was thinking he was one of them.
Yeah, no, fortunately he's still here. I actually got to meet him a couple of weeks ago, and it was funny, man. He said a quote that you'll appreciate as a bodybuilder who obviously, you can call it what you want, but abused drugs, food, took everything to the nth degree in his life. And I asked him if he's ever going to compete again. And he said, Ray, I played Russian roulette and won. And what he was saying was he abused his body. Bodybuilding is not the picture of health and wellness and fitness and strength. Mm-hmm. It's one of the most dangerous things you can do. And it's literally a blood sport. You know, people lose their lives trying to win this game. But anyway, the kind of the point I was making is I had that kind of mindset as a naive 18 to 28 year old where, you know, if I was hurting, I'd turn up a bottle of Jim Beam and wrap my elbows and fuck it, I have to bench press because this is my identity, blah, blah, blah. And then I learned once I broke myself, ripped a pec off the bone, had hip pain so bad I had to stop at red lights and get out of the car and stretch my hip, like all this stuff in my 20s, you know, from beating the shit out of myself, which I don't regret, but this is kind of the evolution of what I was doing. There was a program that I found by Pavel, I don't know how to say his last name, whatever. Yeah, there you go. I knew you'd say it because you're a kettlebell guy too. But anyway, he had this Simple and Sinister program. And I had this stage in my life where I was so broken. I couldn't sleep at night because I was in so much pain, but I'd wake up the next day and whatever I had to do, whether that was Advil, Jim Beam, you name it, I was getting it down so I could train because that's who Ray Zingler is. Just very immature and egotistical and all of it. But anyway, I went through this program, which, you know, it's 10 sets of 10 kettlebell swings, 10 sets of one Turkish get-ups. And I did it the first day and I got through the program in 27 minutes and I'm sitting here looking at myself, you fucking pussy, this is ridiculous. Go do the program 5 times a day. But I committed to just following the program for 6 weeks, just as it was written. And I'd sit there like a fiend because I'm used to 2 hours worth of high volume training and eating intra carbohydrate drinks to get my, and this is 30 minutes. And I said, no, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. So I'd do my workout, take me 30 minutes. And then I'd sit there all day shaking like a fiend. I want to train. I want to train. And then after 6 weeks of doing it, I'd never felt better in my entire life. My horizon was awoken and I saw like, wait a minute, like training is allowed to give you more than it takes from you. This is crazy because I wasn't used to that. That whole Dorian Yates blood and guts video. And then I lived that. Like I wanted my shins to bleed on deadlifts because that was toughness or whatever. And I'm talking like an idiot, but that's how I thought as a young guy. And then I evolved and instead of trying to be that guy that was walking around at 250 that was broad shoulder and this and that, I started viewing fitness and training in the context of health versus the context of just trying to be the biggest, strongest guy in the room. And what I found out is not only could I like maintain strength and like a fair amount of quote size or whatever the hell I was worried about losing by going on this Simple and Sinister program. But then I fell in love with like the performance aspect of it and feeling well and like being able to function better. And then as I had a son, now it was like, wait a minute, like nobody gives a shit if I can squat 6 plates in my underwear in my basement on Instagram. I want to make sure like I'm there for my son and present and feeling good. So now where I have shifted that, like I could only train 4 days a week back in the day because my training was so intense. Like I just, that's all I could do. Now I have a much different approach to where I train every single day, 7 days a week, but I make the prescription. I make the prescription that minimal effective dose. So that way I can get my fix for the day. Cause I got to do something that's just in my DNA. I think that will always be in me, but I can keep my training benign enough to where I know that coming tomorrow I can repeat that. You know what I'm saying? So it's more of the frequency game versus the intensity game. I had my intensity phase and I appreciated that time, but now it's like I can use that 10 or 15 years of just beating the shit out of myself, which built a lot of mass and built a lot of strength. And now I can refine that with more like health conscious training. So that's really where I'm at with, I'm a big kettlebell guy now. Like again, oh, you only barbell squat. I don't barbell squat at all. I do this belt squat that I have, or I use that kabuki bar that, you know, allows me not to have my shoulders in external rotation just because it hurts so bad. So I've softened up, but in a way I feel like I've gotten harder, and I don't say that facetiously, but I can hammer the hell out of the 53-pound kettlebells and do it with ferocity and intensity versus there was times where I'd have 5 plates on my back barbell squatting. I had to take a little shot of whiskey before because I was nervous and I was scared. Yeah. I got to get it. And I still attacked the bar. And I know I want to just kind of jump on here. And this might sound crazy to a lot of people, and it should. You know, I was a psychopath with this stuff. But again, I was training in my younger years for more of the perception of the image of who I think I needed to be versus what was actually best for me. And now that I've swallowed my ego and swallowed my pride, I still want to be strong and functional and all this stuff, but I'm doing it for more of like the 60-year-old Ray, not that 26-year-old Ray that's trying to impress the girl or whatever it is. You know what I mean?
I was going to ask, where do you think that started? Like, why you felt you needed to train and perceive that image? Was it, what was that?
I don't know. You know, I was always the guy, you know, and again, and I love my dad more than anybody in the world, but he grew up in that 80s bodybuilding area. And my dad was jacked out of his mind, huge chest, shoulders, 20-inch arm, the whole thing. And I saw that as a kid growing up. So I don't really know that. And the cool thing about dad is he pushed me, but it was much like I'm trying to do with my son. It was always my decision, but it was around 18 years old, man. It was like after that first 405 bench press, I got up and I was like, I'm that motherfucker. You know, like I just had this like persona, and but again, you're 18 and don't know. And then all of a sudden social media is coming around and I'm the guy at school that's got the arms and this whole thing. Mm-hmm. So I think over time it just built into that. And then every waking second of my life, I'm reading Muscular Development. So it was like, I knew I was never going to look like those guys in the magazine, because if the Lord did one thing right with me, and he did a lot right with me, but if he did one thing, it was make me scared to death of needles. So it was like, I never touched the drugs, because God forbid, if I wasn't horrified of needles, I don't know that I'd be on this conversation right now, because I would have gone so far down the deep end of that, you know, those bodybuilding days that I had. I was so moved by those people just because I appreciated the musculature and the physiques of those guys. What I really loved, and I still love it to this day, is I loved the effort and discipline associated with it. Yeah. I tell people all the time, I don't care what I look like. I don't care how much weight is on the bar. I just want to do really, really hard things. And I equated that like looking a certain way and not hanging out with my friends in the evening because I needed to eat my seventh and eighth meal of the day. I wasn't going to go hang out with my fucking girlfriend. I had chicken and rice to eat, and she didn't have a microwave at the park. I'm not going to do that. Like, how stupid. And then now I'm like, wait a minute, like, what an idiot, you know? But like, that's who I was. And then that Simple and Sinister program allowed me to kind of get over that hump. And now I have a much more, you know, well-rounded mindset to strength and conditioning, health and fitness, or whatever you want to call that. And then to segue that into my kids that I'm training, you know, again, when I was 19 years old and the strength coach that knew everything under the sun, I had the same thing. It was barbells, chains, West Side barbell, conjugate, smelling salts, let's fucking go. You know, like, that's who I was. And now, like, I see guys all the time, right? I don't feel like squatting today. Okay, let's just do leg press. And again, Buddy Morris, who's a strength coach of the Arizona Cardinals, really beat this into my head. He said, Ray, training is just a stimulus. That's all it is. These guys play sports. They're not trying to become the best at lifting weights. I see the benefits of the barbell squat, but if a kid is run down and tired and not feeling it, is the world going to crumble if he does leg press instead? You know, so I want to have structure for my kids, and I do, but I'm also very open to listening to them and understanding where they're at, and then to help program this to kind of, you know, finally answer your question. I know I got long-winded there. But I use what's called a skeleton model. So in an athletic performance training setting, we essentially do three things every day. We sprint, we jump, and we lift weights. So those are the three things we do every day. And obviously I have different ranges of kids from 8 to 26 years old, a kid that doesn't know what a dumbbell is, and a guy that's just flew out to LA to play with the Rams. So you have a big gap of different ages. So what I do is I use what I call that skeleton model, where you might see squat programmed. And for you, that might mean barbell squat with chains on the bar because you're an experienced lifter. But to Timmy, the 9-year-old, that might mean body weight squat to a high box. You know, and the next exercise might be RDL. To you, that might be a max effort, 3 sets of 5 RDL. To Timmy, that might mean I'm going to put a dowel on his back and we're going to teach him the hinge pattern. So what it allows us to do at the gym is we can have 15, 20 kids at a time, all different courses of spectrum, and understanding that we've got kind of the main program, which might be the squat or the press. And then now we have a plethora of regressions and a plethora of progressions. And naturally, working with kids for a living, we're going to have more of the regression side of things, but it allows us to be flexible and give people the same, you know, training, but it's going to meet them where they're at versus forcing them to meet. Well, if you're not ready to barbell squat, you're not ready for Zingler strength. Bullshit. I've got kids all the time that they do body weight squats and they're getting stronger. Your body is a weight and that's external load. You're it's not external load, but it's load and you're getting stronger with that. And it's cool, man, because it makes everybody feel a part. You know, I can have an NFL player and I can have a seventh grader in the chorus do the same workout. Now it looks different, but they're in there together. And what's cool, man, and this is just people I found in general, the more advanced, the stronger, the higher on the totem pole, they're the coolest ones to those young bucks. It's that egotistical 10th grader that thinks he's the shit that's going to, oh, well, you're only on the goblet squat. Meanwhile, the pro athletes over there doing this for the kid on the goblet squat. You know what I mean? So it's like that's the cool side. And that's what makes our gym, I think, special is it's like my biggest dogs, they're the loudest clappers for the young bucks. And that encourages them to stay with it, so to speak. You know,
you've done quite a bit of expanding too recently, haven't you? Like literal in the building, right?
Yeah. So again, I'm a big minimalist. I don't want 20,000 square feet. You know, it's like Biggie said, more money, more problems, more square footage, more problems. You know, you got to start here. So I always want to maximize our footprint. And we added about 2,000 square feet of turf, which really helped us from a, you know, an athletic performance standpoint. I was to get our speed work in, I had to use a lot of those treadmills that I had, which are still great. Yeah. And we still use them. But being able, we have like a 30-yard runway now to where I can do a lot of the acceleration type work outside with them and really blend what I think is important strength and conditioning with team sport athletes is the field and the weight room. You know, we do a lot of contrast training where they might go do a set of squats and then they walk 3 feet and they're right into an outdoor plyometric station, you know, so it's nice to have that space. But yeah, it's been going very, very well. We're super, super fortunate.
That's awesome. I want to get away from training for a minute.
Me too. I don't like this shit. I don't want to talk about it anymore. I'm kidding.
I know you're a book guy.
Yes.
What do you got that you've been into lately?
So best book I read this year and probably ever is a book called Unreasonable Hospitality. It's essentially about a guy who is in the restaurant industry that just talks about over-delivering value and service and paying attention to the details and like what separates. It's a fine dining restaurant, but going into the weeds of like how he preps his team and just the way that he treats people unreasonably. And obviously that That's in cool. a positive sense. That was really good. I'm currently reading the Vince Lombardi biography, which is a book that I read when I was younger. Awesome book. Ones that you will like that I'm going to send you. I don't know if you've heard of The Daily Dad. So it's just, it's like a devotion, but it's essentially just about fatherhood and like little details.
Who wrote
of like,
that one?
This was Ryan Holiday. So the same guy who wrote Ego is the Enemy, all that stuff. Yep. And it's just really, really good. It's a quick little 3-minute read. I'm going to send it to you when we get off here. It's really, really made a difference in my life from a standpoint of like, I read it down here in my office and it talks about like centering yourself and gratitude and understanding the big picture and your son doesn't care. Hey, there's a quote in here that says, you know, the only people that are going to notice that you worked extra hours are your kids, you know, and it's like, wow, that hit me. So it's like, I'm working down here. My son comes down here and it's like, Dad, can I show you my Lego bit? And I'm like writing something. No. Now I take that 5 minutes that I wouldn't have taken before. Another one, I don't want to crowd you, but this will be very important for you. It's called Raising Emotionally Strong Boys. So just
I heard of that one.
Yeah, it's very good from a standpoint of just like there's no like and you know how it is, this like pseudo toughness world that we live within or whatever. But this book, obviously, it talks about the very real emotions and what I think would be helpful for you, too, now having a daughter, like how the boys and the girls are different from a mindset perspective and all that. Yeah. But it's a big difference. And then
that's awesome. Do you do much? Do you do any fiction of any kind?
So I do. So I'm big on, I loved the Jack Carr series. Yep. I read all that. I'm actually reading one now. I'm sorry. I'm reading 18 books at a time.
You're one of those
called,
guys.
Yes. The Sun by Philip Meyer. So that was, it was a Netflix show too.
That's what it was. Because I've heard of that and I heard somebody else that I know mention that and they were talking about the show.
Yes.
Because isn't that Dennis Quaid?
No, it might be the show. I haven't
seen the
show.
Yeah.
Seen the show yet. The book, it's neat. You would love it, man. It's like old Western Plains, and there's three stories of three generations woven into one.
Pierce Brosnan.
Not Dennis Quaid. Gotcha. You would love the book. And just to kind of give you a little tidbit, and I don't know if it's the best tactic, but it's the way that I read. I essentially, in the morning, I read something related to professional development, whether that's business or whatever, yeah. You know, in the afternoon, I'll read a little bit of something that's more related to like personal development. Like if I'm working through an injury myself, I'll read a book about back pain or whatever it is. So it's more like personal development. And then to nightcap, I always read some sort of fiction before I go to bed to kind of bring my mind down a little bit. Yeah. And what I do, the only reason, because I'm dumber than a box of rocks, is I download the books on Audible and then I buy the physical copy and then I'll turn it on to like 1.5x speed or whatever on Audible.
Just follow along with
and
it.
And I'll have them follow along because, you know, I'm one of those guys. I'm on page 10 and I'll be on page 10 for 3 months, but it helps me. You know, you hear it, you read it, you see it. It's just, I picked that up from, I don't really know where I got it. I think my mom told me I needed to read it as a kid, but it helps me a lot. And then like I'm listening to a biography right now, so I got to drive later. I'll listen to that like a podcast or whatever. Sure. So,
You're just consuming.
I try to, and I always take notes on what I write. You know, I used to like have this like weird like pride thing about like, I can read 300 books a year or whatever it was. But it was like I used to read a lot and then not get anything out of it. So now I purposely go slower. I'd rather read half the amount of books but put forth, you know, 2x the effort into actually making applicable improvement in my life. I'm an Audible slash hard copy guy.
That's awesome. It reminded me when you brought up that Unreasonable Hospitality book.
Yeah.
There's a show called The Bear. I don't know if you've watched it or heard of it.
No.
It's about a restaurant and the whole premise of there's two seasons of it. Third season's coming out, I think this summer sometime or whatever.
Oh, cool.
But the whole premise of it is like this real fine dining chef has to come back to his hometown and take over his brother's diner who just passed away. And so he tries to, and it's like a failing restaurant or whatever. And so he comes back to try and like make it this, you know, restaurant. It's extremely well written, but there's an episode in the second season where like his cousin, who's just this brash, like Chicago type guy, who's a terrible employee, or whatever, he sends him off to have to work at an ultra fine dining place in Chicago. And I can't remember what the name of it is, but it's an actual restaurant that they show the episode.
Right.
So even if you don't watch the entire series, like I'll send you which episode name it is so you can watch this episode, but they show like that kind of stuff that they do inside those fine dining restaurants that it blew me away that I couldn't believe the stuff that they do, like with the hosts and the hostesses and the guys that just wander around that are like the message guys that just bring stuff to the kitchen and they do all these crazy things. It's the coolest thing ever.
And
I've read about it in other context with other chefs that talk about that show and they say, this is the best, the most realistic portrayal of a restaurant life. That's like movies can't get it right. Shows can't get it right.
Sure.
Like this is what it's like in these kitchens and in these restaurants. And so like, I'm sure a lot of that stuff is in that book.
Yes.
But it's awesome. So it's really cool.
I'm going to check that show out because, first of all, the restaurant industry, as much as I'm not in it, it definitely impresses me from a standpoint of like how many moving parts there are to put on a production is essentially what it is. But you would love the book, man. And you're absolutely right. It speaks to, like, for example, the hostesses he was talking about in this book. Anytime they have reservations, they study social media so that way they can get the appearances down of the people so they can greet them by name. And then to take it a step further, they'll find out the hotel they're staying at. So that way they know that when they go back to their hotel, they can have a concierge bottle of wine sitting on the bed.
Take it
a step further. If they see them with their luggage on their, you know, coming into the restaurant, whether they just flew in or they're flying back out, they'll call the airline and upgrade their seats to first class. And then the last one, and I'll shut up. This guy, he overheard some patrons talking about, like, they're in a fine dining restaurant about to spend $1,000 on a meal. They were talking about wanting a New York street dog or whatever, you know, a $3 hot dog from the stand.
That's exactly what they pull off in the show. It was a Chicago pizza.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So the guy goes out and he buys these four hot dogs and he comes back in and then he has the chef put a preparation of this hot dog. And eventually the chef was like, what the hell? Like, no, I'm doing this. I'm like creme brulee, whatever the fuck these people eat. And he dresses up this hot dog. And they said the guy ended up tipping whatever the cost of the meal was, like $1,000. You know, so the guy paid $1,000 for the hot dog. And the whole premise of that story is they're not buying the lobster. They're buying the experience. And now you give them that experience. Who the fuck else is going to do? Nobody. And that's what elevates these, you know, three Michelin star restaurants or whatever. And now how can I apply that to my life? Here I am thinking I'm busy, but I can't give that girl an extra 5 minutes who's going through something, you know, that wants to talk to me, you know, so it helps me elevate myself you know, hey, I'm not in the restaurant industry, but I can give a little bit more effort into the details, so to speak. That's why I think the book is applicable. Yeah.
It's so good. Then they literally pull that. They did it because they're Chicago restaurant. So he's like, they did the same thing. They searched social media, they did everything, and they said like, the one thing that this guy wants, he wants an actual Chicago-style deep-dish pizza. And he's like, that's the only thing he wanted on this whole trip. And he's like, then why is he here? And like, whatever. Right. He's like, don't worry, go get me one. And then he brought it back, and then he did like this whole dressed-up thing. And then the other one that was really good was like, she was a teacher, and they had said that like she'd saved up, because she had posted about it and how excited she was to come to this restaurant. She finally got a reservation. She had saved for like years in order to come and do this, like to just be at the restaurant. She wanted to do it. And the I don't even know what they're called. Like the guy who runs the front of the house, you know, the thing. Right. He's given the whole prep before the shift.
Right.
And he's telling the story and he goes, I just want you guys to know she is not paying a dime while she's here tonight.
I love
she's like, he's like, I don't want her to get a check. I don't want her to know anything. We are covering this one tonight. Don't worry about it. And I'm like, is the coolest thing ever.
That's the best thing ever. And you know what? It felt better to that meal, to that staff than making that $1,000 tip. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's the cool part about the whole thing is like,
it's great, you know,
it's that simple thing. And it's like, it's not about the receiving, it's the giving. And like, that's that is something that, again, is going to make that restaurant extraordinarily successful. Just having that mindset is what separates people. You know what I mean?
Like the show, like if you actually get into, I don't know if you've got the bandwidth to take on a whole series, but if you do, I think you'd get into that one.
I got 1 hour a week that I can commit to TV. It might take me a month, but I do enjoy that kind of stuff. So what did you say it was called? I want to write it down real quick.
It's called The Bear. And it's on, I believe it's on Hulu. I'll have to double check on that.
Yeah,
it's on,
we have it's all Hulu the show. Hulu, Netflix.
But they just cleaned house. Their second season was last summer, whatever. They cleaned house at the Emmys this year. They won like, everybody won everything from that show. So it's
damn.
It's good.
That's great. Yeah, I'm going to check that out for sure. And is the restaurant that he took over for his brother, is that a fine dining restaurant as well? Or was that just a diner?
It was just a diner. It was like a burger diner type of place that he took over. And it was failing. And like that's kind of the whole premise of the show is like him coming in and having to save this business that was his brother's.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
So there's an emotional touch. And for sure. Yeah, that's great.
I'm not going to ruin it, especially if you haven't listened or watched it. For anybody else that's listening to this, I forget sometimes that people listen to this. It's not just me and Ray talking on a phone
for
call.
Sure.
there's an episode that's like, it's the one of the most, I think it's probably one of the highest rated episodes of television in the last handful of years. But it's the most uncomfortable episode of television I've watched in years, and not like funny The Office uncomfortable. Like it makes you sweat, like how anxious you get watching it, and it's it's intense and it's good. It's well done, but it's like damn. Okay.
Yeah. So, I'm going to check that out. You're speaking my language. I like that.
Dude, well, we're kind of coming up on an hour, so we'll kind of start to wrap it up, but I wanted to you know, what do you think, what things do you have coming up or in the pipeline that you're working on that you're excited about?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that question. You know, it's funny, as much as I do like that question, it's going to be a little bit of an odd answer, to where it's like, now what I'm doing, especially with my kids, is like, you know, you always hear that sometimes the best answer is no. And it's honestly, to be honest with you, I'm turning down more stuff than I may have previously not turned down, because I'm trying to eliminate versus trying to add when it comes to the time with my children. So as much as I'm still heavily focused on Zingler Strength and Conditioning, which is our brick and mortar outfit, and, you know, I kind of am big into the short form media. You know, you are the one that got me into this Substack thing. You know, you told me about this 2 years ago, and not to toot my own horn, but I've posted on Substack every day without a miss for over a year and a half. So I write a daily blog every day that I blame you. And essentially what I do is I have a little Twitter post every day, and then I basically expand upon my Twitter post that I share to Instagram. And then I also use that for Substack. So writing is really my creative outlet. And so I spend a lot of time reading. I spend a lot of time writing. I spend a lot of time focused on our gym. And then obviously, most importantly, my family. I read a quote a couple of years ago that, you know, greatness is achieved by having your mindset focused on a limited set of targets. So it was one of those things that instead of trying to add, let's do this, let's do that, let's do this, you know, I'm trying to be really fucking good at a couple of things versus trying to be decent at 20 things. And, you know, obviously prioritizing my time, you know, not to get all sentimental, but I view wealth not in the context of how much, but how much time do you have to spend the way that you want to spend it. So I wish I could come on here and tell you I've got some big thing going, but it's really just hammering nails every day, trying to do what I do to serve my community and spend a lot of time with my family. You know, that's where I'm at, though, man. Yeah, I am super blessed with it.
That's awesome, dude. Well, if anybody is wanting to follow you, what are all, like, with the Substack and with Instagram, and you have a couple of different Instagram things, one for the gym and then your personal one, but where are all those things where everybody can read your stuff and follow along?
For sure. So my Substack, which is obviously just a blog post, it's a daily blog that I write, that's at zinglerstrength.substack.com, and then I'm heavily involved with the whole Instagram world. And to your point, I've got my personal page, which is more of obviously personal life stuff, but then Zingler Strength, which is my most popular page, which is really related to strength and conditioning, performance training, etc. And then we actually just made my son, and I'm managing it, but his little Instagram page to track his training, because what I've found with a lot of my audience is they have young kids as well, and they're wanting to learn how to, you know, train their kids. So it's not one of those, like, here's this regimen that you need to follow, but it's more or less showing how to make it fun and create games to associate positively with fitness. So that's at Zingler Strength is all of my Instagram handles, and then I've got Twitter X, I think it's called now, at Ray Zingler. And if anybody has any questions, you know, one thing I always say at the end of these podcasts is I was very fortunate to have a lot of mentors and a lot of people that answered a lot of questions when I was a young buck, and I'll never big league anybody. So any type of DM or my email, which is ray@zinglerstrength.com. I'm very excited. I network and communicate with a lot of coaches and just everyday moms and dads, to be honest, from all over the country in regards to youth strength and conditioning, which is kind of my shtick. And
that's awesome.
Other than that, hanging low in Marietta, Georgia, doing my thing. So
that's awesome, dude. Well, I appreciate you hopping back on, dude. It was good to catch up, and we'll do it again soon, man.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Ross.